This is side B of session number 49, recorded on August 20th, 2007. And we finally arrived in Dobbstown. We're now going to do my charts. And the first chart is what's called the Bob Dobbs formula chart. And I would say, let's look at the whole title. It says Bob Dobbs formula, and then colon, coevolutionary anticipatory mimesis equals how the media archetypes fit the Battle of Jericho in American politics. And there's five columns, and across the top, the far left is ALP, referring to Anna Olivia Plurbel, the woman, mother, woman figure in James Joyce's Finnegan's Wake, published in 1939. And then the next to the right, second on the left column, is Shem. The middle one is Sean. Now, Shem and Sean are the twin sons of ALP. And then the fourth column over from the left, or the second column from the right, is Issy, which is the sister of Shem and Sean, daughter of ALP. And the father is known as Humphrey Chimpton Heerwicker, and so he's indicated as HCE in the far right-hand column. So there's five columns in this chart. So what do you make of the title and chart? Have you ever looked at this much, Scott?
Yeah, it's been a while, but it's familiar to me.
But you looked at the other chart, the tiny note chart.
Yeah, and I know how the two relate. This one actually, goes from a period of 1750 through 2020, but it's the last three rows on this chart are lifted off to make the, and then exploded into the tiny note chart.
Now, we forgot to mention to go to Fatty Communion, our site, or go to fivebody.com, and you can see the chart there. What's it called in the... you go to fivebody.com, and then there's the chart and image archive, just like where you went for the top-down and bottom-up charts. And I think it's called the formula chart.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, should be pretty easy to find.
Yeah, it's in the same list.
Yep.
So you click on that, and you'll see a small version, but it's all we got right now.
Mm-hmm.
It was made by Mark Free of Positone.com. I think he designed this back in 96, 97.
The Bob Dobbs formula chart?
Well, the image that we're using.
Oh.
I think he made it way back then, because he presented the charts, or the early. Maybe he just did this one. Now, I remember posting this. This was published in Flipside, and that was in, must have been made around then,
mm-hmm.
96 or something. I mean, it was published, I think, in 96, 97 in Flipside.
Mm-hmm.
So, what do you think it means?
Oh, well, let's see. Bob Dobbs formula. Formula for what? For coevolutionary anticipatory mimesis. That's a mouthful. So, mimesis evokes, in my mind, the word meme and the word mime and the word and the idea of... being a miming is to reflect or to copy, or maybe there's some doubleness in there, I'm not sure. Co-evolutionary, I don't know what you mean by who the two evolutionary partners are in the co-evolutionary phrase there. It's anticipatory, meaning I think we're getting into the part of your chart where the effects precede the causes, unlike the last bottom up and top down, we were not really too much in the effects precede causes. You want to comment on co-evolutionary anticipatory mimesis?
Beg your pardon?
You want to comment on co-evolutionary anticipatory mimesis?
Not yet, but then...
Then it equals how, oh, so here's the formula, it co-evolutionary anticipatory mimesis equals how the media archetypes fit the Battle of Jericho in American politics. And media archetypes, we're talking about the form of the media, probably, like the telegraph, the telephone, the radio, movies, and television, and so on. How the media archetypes fit the Battle of Jericho. I don't really remember what the Battle of Jericho was all about, so I can't comment on that in American politics.
Battle of Jericho was where somebody blew a trumpet, and the trumpet knocked the walls down of the enemy so that the heroes were able to defeat the enemy and go into their territory.
Mm-hmm.
They use sound to knock out the walls.
Mm. Okay.
So how the media archetypes knock down the walls in American politics. And American means global. The global American hologram.
Mm-hmm.
Co-evolutionary anticipatory mimesis. Anticipatory implies tetrad management work, anticipating what was going to be the effects of whatever new environments were created, and how humans mime those effects, and then later you get into the android meme, and it mimes the human responses, so it becomes blurred. And that's the co-evolutionary, is that humans react to the technologies they unwittingly create, and then the technologies respond to the responses and confusions of the human inventions,
mm-hmm.
or the humans themselves. So that's an opening blurred statement.
What was that comment that Marshall made, something to the effect that humans make technology and technology apes humans?
Yeah.
Did I say that right?
It's close. We shape the tools. We shape our tools, and then our tools shape us, was the first phase. Then McLuhan changed it to, we shape our tools, then our tools ape us.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when we say Marshall, we don't mean Bob Marshall. We mean Marshall McLuhan.
Yeah.
But we've given time to Bob Marshall, so we might think, some might think that. Okay, so what this chart is a picture of, you could say, the electric phase of human invention from 1750 to 1960. And then the android meme comes in, 1960 to 2012. The tiny note chart is an extension of the 1960. Well, I should say here, from the homeopathic, if you look in the far left column under ALP at the bottom, three levels up, it says homeopathic cliche probes. And below that, anthropomorphic physical, and then a deadline, sort of something you see on a monitor or in a hospital when someone dies.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so homeopathic cliche probes and anthropomorphic physical and then the deadline, those last three phases are extracted to the tiny note chart. The tiny note chart is the those three phases in detail. It's spanning from 1960 to 1990. But this chart is mainly, including that last phase, but mainly from 1750 to 1960. And it merges Bob Marshall's bottom-up and top-down. So when you look in the far left, where it says ALP, and then underneath one-half stage, then below that bottom-up ground, effects preceding causes. Then you go over to the right-hand side, it says HCE, the other half stage. Then below that, it says top-down bureaucratic ground. And then in brackets, causes. Causes is in quotes, merging with effects. The causes merging with effects actually refers to a statement at the bottom of page 137 of Take Today by Marshall McLuhan and Barry Nevitt. So if you have that book, check out the last paragraph on that page. But we'll leave that for now. So what you have here, so the woman figure represents bottom up, and the top down is represented by the male principle. In between are the kids, and then they're considered underneath their names actors, in brackets retrieval slash interiorization. They represent slower rear view mirror phases. What were in Bob Marshall's chart, the figures, right?
Mm-hmm.
But there's two grounds, so to speak, in this chart, the ALP on the far left and the HCE on the far right, so that they represent the stage, the structure of the stage, and the actors are Shem, Sean, and Issy, the kids.
Mm-hmm.
So under Shem, you see him as categorized as technological slash cultural enemy. Under Sean, his brother, you see technological slash weaponry. Under Issy, it says anthropomorphic, sociological, psychological mask slash leg. So the fights between the kids are the figures, and they're reacting to the ground unconsciously.
Okay.
When you have under ALP telegraph, that's the first technological ground, bottom-up ground, it is dated on the far right as 1750 to 1800. All right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, the telegraph was not invented till 1840, approximately. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So why is telegraph listed as 1750 to 1800? That's because we're showing the effects preceding the causes. We're showing how the thinking that would lead to the invention of the telegraph is happening a period of time before that. By certain previous environments, the thoughts they evoke, and then certain geniuses respond to those thoughts, and they start thinking about what their discoveries imply. So we know around 1757, Ben Franklin did the famous flying of the kite. And remember, the electricity comes down, the kite hits the ground, and that gave him a clue about electricity being in the sky or in the ground. Well, I don't know how he thought of it.
Right.
You know that story?
Yeah.
So we see Ben Franklin kind of discovering electricity, at least in the industrial frame of mind. He's an industrial guy. He's in the middle of the Gutenberg Revolution, and it's becoming the steam and industrial revolution. So he's in the cusp of that. And he then starts, if you read his works, he is trying to explain electricity, and he works out some early terms for electricity that people will think about after that and invent new experiments. Like you have, what was it, the Volta? Volta, the Italian, makes an experiment and creates the voltaic battery, I think it is. And there's another guy, the galvanic battery. Do you remember those terms?
Yeah.
Yeah. Those early technologies that come in a few, 20, 30, 40 years after Ben Franklin, they're thinking out the application of electricity, which humans hadn't done before in recorded history. The point is that they have no idea of what's going to come from it. And if you told them that a telegraph would show up, and whatever that would mean to them, and the effects of it on society, I don't think they thought of that. It sort of shows up by accident. All right? As a matter of fact, McLuhan calls technologies the accidents of history.
Hmm.
And he says, we now can see the whole process of discovery and invention, so we should no longer be subject to accidents, but to program fate. He said he programmed inevitable fate, not inevitable fate, inevitable. He talks about that in Take Today, the executive's drop, who came out in 1972.
See, maybe the Android meme was already going on back in the time when they were making, when Franklin was doing his experiments, and then they were developing the battery, and it was
setting up the humans.
Yeah, it was, yeah, right. It was sort of organizing people's brains in such a way as to create the telegraph.
Yeah, you could say that's the final cause of Aristotle's four causes. The final cause, sort of teleologically speaking, the idea, the notion that the science of teleology, what is the final outcome? Well, the Android Me is going to be the final outcome of this stuff. And
yeah.
Yes, my charts are pictures. The tiny note chart is a picture of the Android Me. So it does lead, according to this chart, to the Android meme.
Yeah, so then it's debatable as to whether or not the Android meme was already in its infancy back in the Telegraph, and it was building itself, you know, way back then. It was already beginning to build itself.
Yeah, that might be a chicken and egg question, you know, which came first or...
Now, well, before we started, you pointed out to me that it's worth mentioning here that McLuhan believed that technology was, well, we all know it was an extension of our, you know, we see it as being extensions of our senses, but that I had mentioned to you John Lilly's belief that back in the 70s that technology was from outer space. It was like an extraterrestrial, the solid-state entity was, you know, had gotten a foothold in the minds of human beings and was... and was using human beings to bootstrap itself as an invasion. And you said that Marshall clearly...
An invasion?
Yeah, invading the Earth.
Right.
But that it had sort of extraterrestrial sources and some sort of silicone intelligence that, you know, was different from carbon-based intelligence that human beings exhibit. And you said that McLuhan firmly stated otherwise, so why don't you go ahead and state that?
Yeah, he didn't think... He said we need to understand that technologies are not alien invaders of us, that they are us. They come from our bodies. And that was his main notion he wanted to drum into people, because during the mechanical phase of technology, you know, over the last 1,000 years before we get to electric age, these bulky things outside of us certainly didn't look like extensions of us. They looked inhuman. But as you get into the electric age and technology becomes more convenient, faster, and more friendly, it starts to become plausible that it's sort of like us, or at least like our brains. So in the electric age, we can get the idea, we can be more open to the idea that technologies are us and come from our bodies and not from some alien thing. But they are... pretty alien up to the electric age.
Yeah. So we have this sort of drive to make tools because we always want to figure out how to make our chores a little bit easier, and so it would be natural for us to sort of extend our senses and our hands and our feet and so on, and to make them sort of automated, so that we can get around easier. So that would be, rather than sort of an alien intrusion into our biosphere, it would just sort of be a natural inclination or tendency that we would have to want to do that.
Yeah, you say get around easier. I think it's Frank Zingroni, a student of McLuhan, who pointed out that the deep primal archetypal desire in humans through all cultures is the idea of perpetual motion, and so we'll get that in our dream life and have dreams of that, maybe like a flying and things like that, very little friction.
Mm-hmm.
That may be the prime cause, the prime mental archetype of the desire, the symbol of the desire to create an environment where we can get around easier.
Mm-hmm.
So we now have come to this point in this century where we can send our voices all over the planet quickly, which no one would have imagined a long time ago, so that we are getting closer to getting around quicker.
Mm-hmm.
So that is, it's like Dreaming Awake, Finnegan Wake's title.
Mm-hmm.
Joyce's title, Finnegan Wake. We're evolving naturally to a state of dreaming awake, or getting our dream life in actuality.
Mm-hmm.
Because the dreams always are urging or desiring getting around easier,
right?
Different parts of your senses. So that may be the prime archetype, perpetual motion.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Well, these experiments leading to the telegraph were, incremental and very small. I'm beginning to remember now that when the lightning hit the conductive material, the kite, I guess he had a key on the end of the kite, and so the metal sort of attracted the
electricity.
From the lightning. And then what he discovered was that the current traveled through the string.
Right.
And so then he started, and then that was around the same time that they were starting to figure out about static electricity and wonder about how you could rub these two things and then there would be this sort of field between them, and if you put them together you'd get this little discharge, or they'd either stick together or they'd want to fly apart.
Well, the Greeks knew that. That had been around a long time, but they were thinking about it in a new way, I guess.
Yeah. Well, because after his experiment, then they started realizing that you could, you know, if you had the right material, you know, like they started putting, you know, like strings between poles, and then creating static electricity charges and getting them to discharge at the end of the string, and then noticing that the current traveled through the string and created an effect on the other end of the string. And then, you know, like the string was hanging from some metal, like you put some metal hooks up to hold the string up at different points along the way, and they noticed that it was shorting out the circuit, and then realized that the current was going into the metal hook, and then they started thinking about different kinds of then they started learning about conductive and insulating materials by just simply making these simple observations, making better wires that would conduct the electricity better, and so on. And so they're very tiny, incremental steps, and they all came from, you know, observations that they were making about the physical world.
Yeah, well, that's a good summary. Mm-hmm. So what I'm presenting here is, it's kind of like your idea of the inevitability of this evolution of technology. And when you get a good understanding of Joyce's Finnegan's Wake book, you see that he's sort of showing the cycle of invention from speech to television,
mm-hmm.
and the inevitable process of extension of our faculties, senses of faculties. So there was an order, he saw in retrospect, of the evolution of our technology in our culture. So,
but then just to offer another, you know, possible perspective, since we don't know, since the Evergreens told you about when the Boothians encountered the proto-human beings and did a little alternation to their genetics.
To the apes, yeah.
Yeah, to the apes, in order to, I guess, help to grow the opposable thumb and to change the structure of the jaw so that the diet would change, and that would change, make chemical changes in the brain and so on. And
change the posture.
Yeah, possibly even change the larynx and make it more able to learn how to talk and stuff. That then we were, that was like the, like on the Sistine Chapel, where God touches man and there's that little spark of intelligence that jumps from one finger to the other. I mean, we may have been downloaded with certain information into our DNA or something that was propelling us to want to learn about technology too. So we don't really know.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. I think the Evergreens, it reminds me, they did say, they raised the question, was part of the effect of the altering of us by the Boothians that it created a subconscious or something in our brain that was different from the animal that made us curious and wanted to explore or to create new things, and that's all that was necessary to lead to where we are today.
Yeah, well, I remember you saying that it actually, I forget why I'm missing a step here, but, well, when we began to develop language, it created a separation between the, you know, and which created the memory function.
Yeah, well, animals have memory in a way, but we had will. We could alter the memories, make choice in what memories we created,
mm-hmm.
or what experience or pathway we went. Mm-hmm. Everyone say that the will part is that little gap. Now, when you talk about the Sistine Chapel and the hand of God trying to touch the hand of man, they don't touch.
No.
But that's what's genius about the painting, is that it has the gap, the resonating gap. And so you can have, you can put any kind of notion about what the gap means in there, including the gap of electricity that mm-hmm. leaps across. So it can be natural energies, it can be emotional gap, it can be a metaphysical gap, can be a closing gap. It's so resonant, that idea of a gap. As McLuhan said, the gap is where the action is. So electricity is an extension of the gaps in our brains, the synapses, mm-hmm. biological synapses that leap across each other. So
what's significant about the gap? I mean, it presumes that you have two borders and there's a space between them, and something is what's in the gap. Is it something that mediates between the two? It becomes the area of the metaphor, the thing that mediates between two other things.
Yeah, the one meaning would be the human consciousness that becomes different from the animal or the ape is, and this is why I went into the Sistine Chapel, I didn't finish it in that, this sense, is that the gap is the will that the effect of the alteration created in us. And this weird non-substance will, which we might say our ego or something, our minds, can make choices.
Mm-hmm.
It's a gap between it's the new thing between that makes us human, maybe not gods, but not animals. So the actual thing that does the thinking is a gap.
Yeah. The fact that when you look at, say, you know, a cup of water and you're going to have some water, so you reach out, you grasp that with your hand, there's an act of will that goes between it's an act of will which bridges the metaphysical and the physical domains. It bridges
memory. You can bring in memory at that point.
Mm-hmm.
It's playing with memory.
Mm-hmm. And the other thing, just another metaphor, was that, like Blavatsky always thought that human beings were designed to be a medium between the world of spirit and the world of matter, that they were designed to actually be the place of where the information is exchanged between the two worlds.
Yeah, we're a gap phenomenon in our own species.
Mm-hmm.
In nature is what you're saying.
Yeah.
So where did we get? How did we get onto this from the chart? We were talking about electricity. Then you went into Ben Franklin and the meaning of electricity and the changes. But just before that, can't remember what I was saying. But
we could step all the way back to just, you know, getting back on track and noticing that ALP and HCE are two are both
aspects of
the ground, but they're polar aspects. And then the actors are the conflict working itself out between the two polarities.
Yes, because this may make sense once I explain what's under HCE. He's a top-down bureaucratic ground, causes merging with effects. So ALP is the environment that's going to lead to the telegraph. So the effects of the telegraph are showing up before the actual telegraph. So the telegraph is the cause. It's the final cause, you could say, that all the thinking that Ben Franklin and his successors wondering about electricity and applying it, they are going along a path that in retrospect might look predetermined. But they don't know that, and they definitely don't know what they're going to make from it and its effects. But there are, we'll call them the elites, the political powers, those concerned, the managers of society at that time, 1750, in Europe and the United States. Well, it wasn't in the United States then, it was a colony, but the point is that intelligence agencies or thinkers or managers.
We were actually, if we refer back to our earlier charts, we would say that it was the Fondo family trust at that time, and the Industrial Revolution was beginning to happen.
Right. Well, they were doing that, but with the Industrial Revolution, you had the democratization of knowledge, beginning with the printing press, so that there were individuals like Galileo or Kepler or inventors. There was that level that the Fondi had to watch. See what they, I mean, they eventually roped Galileo in, right? Brought him back in, controlled him. So what HC represents in this chart is the elites looking for the effects of what people are thinking about. And they're generally matching it back to the causes or issues or ideologies they are concerned about, the foundations of their power. So they're wondering what is going to be a challenge to their power. What country or team or enemy is going to cause a problem for them.
Right.
So
it's worth pointing out that these guys, who were all Americans, were operating in America, which was built on the printing press, so it didn't have all of the baggage of the past to have to, you know, to keep it from being able to just, you know, fly with the new technology.
Right, but they were a colony in 1757, so the effects of Franklin and whatever his networks were thinking and what they wanted to do 20 years later, they're going to have a revolution. So, there was the ground for all this stuff to come out of North America, then easier than in Europe. So there was, you know, inventions going on in Europe, but the...
But that the printing press was obsolesced by the telegraph in America makes sense, because if Americans didn't have all the historical architecture that they had, infrastructure that they were stuck in, like, you know, they were in the older countries in Europe and Asia and so on, then they were free to just let the visual space, the printing visual effects of the printing press, just complete itself,
right? Whereas in
and obsolesce itself and push itself to the next stage.
And yeah, whereas in Europe you have the French Revolution in 1789, and that leads to all kinds of problems, and eventually to Napoleon. So yeah, you had a backlog in Europe that any new breakthroughs politically, any new revolutions had more. Challenging resistance from the forces of tradition than in the United States.
Yeah, the old power structures were trying to maintain themselves and struggle for their survival.
Right, so we see that HCE represents those bureaucratic power structures that will be, as time goes on, upset by the new environments that come out of ALP. So the... So you see how that's the top-down control by the Illuminati, the Fondi, the secret elites. That's represented by HCE, and ALP represents the bottom-up. So you see how the Bob Marshall charts are used in one chart here.
Right.
So...
got a bit of a cyclotron thing going on, which you... actually lead your tiny note chart by calling it the cyclotron.
Right.
Homeopathic cliche probes, but there's kind of a cyclotron action going on here between the ALP and the HCE.
Right, and the reason, if you notice under ALP, it says effects preceding causes. Effects is not in quotes, causes is not in quotes, but under HCE, causes are in quotes, because they represent more the political intelligence agencies who have causes that they think they should defend, and they don't know that new technologies are going to come along and create a new kind of cause, either in the people or among competing elites. So HCE...
So causes is in quotes, because you're sort of saying on the side that these aren't the real causes. These are the causes that people think are the causes, but they're not the real causes. That's why you got it in quotes.
Yeah, and they're generally rearview mirror causes. And they merge with the effects. And
the effects being the causes of the bottom-up ground effects.
Yeah, the effects coming from ALP.
So See, that word effects always, I still draw a blank when I hear that word. Effects is, I don't know exactly what that means half the time. I think of the of causes, it's easier for me to think of the telegraph as being a cause of a change
in the causes.
Yeah.
Now, effects is the ramifications of those causes on previous environments.
Okay. So effects are always acting on the previous causes.
They're results. So they are figures.
Mm-hmm.
Like Shemshon and Issy are effects from previous environments. And they're going to be upset by newer causes, hidden ground causes.
Right.
And yet, the figures that are effects, they're active thinking processes, and they're picking up on the coming causes.
Sometimes when I hear the word effect, it sounds like it's less substantial than the cause. You know, you say the effect of this or that. It always sounds kind of like, well, the virtual sort of effect or the, you know, the effect that it had on me or whatever. It somehow feels like it's disconnected from substance.
I think you mean it's more transient.
Yeah.
No, and that's true. The effects are always changing. The causes are changing, but the effects are, what are they? They're sort of not noticed. And it's hard to look at it from our time because we have so many changes going on all the time that we can see changing causes and then their effects. So in slower times, the effects are more what is noticeable, and the causes aren't. The causes are the hidden ground.
Right. But an effect, you know, and also, you know, an effect is a cause. The effect of turning on the light switch is that the room fills with light. But the fact that the room fills with light is a cause that allows you to see what's
effect
going on
yourself
in the room.
Yeah, to go around and do efficient causalities or moral causalities or formal causalities. Formal causality is working with the people around you, the effects.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's the being able to see the dishes to wash them. Another kind of efficient causality.
Mm-hmm.
So effects. Now, why do you think that it's more ephemeral? It's like the content. For you, effects are the content of a ground, which is the cause.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So
sometimes, you know, you'll hear the word, they'll say the word, you know, the phrase, you know, well, in effect, it did this or that. Again, you're taking the word effect and making it sort of like, it's sort of an illusion.
It's insubstantial.
Insubstantial.
Which that may be the way people think of it for a long time over the last couple hundred years. And McLuhan may have been purposely emphasizing the transient to get people out of rearview mirror interpretation of the causes. So,
mm-hmm.
So the effects of something is. Do you think the causes are more solid? Yeah. Yet you don't want to be confused by McLuhan because he's saying the ground or the causes are less solid. You don't even notice them.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah. Well, just, you know, might as well just nail it down here. The dictionary says effect is a noun, when used as a noun, a change that is a result or consequence of an action or other cause.
So the action or the cause is more substantial.
Yeah. Well, but the example that they use, the lethal effect of hard drugs. Well, hard drugs are something that you can, you know, you hold in your hand, one guy buys it and the other guy sells it and it exchanges hands and so on. But the lethal effect, you know, is that it kills somebody. And but that's not something you put in a bag and walk away with. Well, maybe I'm making too much out of it, but
that's substantial.
Yeah.
You get killed.
Well, that is, yeah.
So, we have here effects preceding causes, but under HCE, the causes merge with effects, so they become interchangeable in a way.
Mm-hmm.
So causes is in quotes to mean it's like insubstantial effects. The causes are transitory things. They're not as devastating. They're trying to hold on to power. They're the causes of the manager's interests. But they merge with the effects being the unforeseen stimulations caused by deeper causes.
Mm-hmm.
So, under ALP, you have telegraph. Then far right, you have 1750 to 1800, lockdown centralization. That means to make solid and to understand it's a cause worth preserving, that is the activity of the HCE.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's when it becomes lawmakers make laws around it, and Parliament and Congress get together and make declarations and
Gutenbergian laws.
Yeah.
And they're locking down something that is going to be undermined within 100 years by the decentralizing effect of the telegraph.
Mm-hmm.
Telegraph is going to start to bring in the acoustic resonating spheres, and that will cause a crisis for the centralized bureaucracies that have been established, say, from 1750 to 1850,
mm-hmm.
when the telegraph actually shows up.
Right.
So, in this effort to lock down what is obvious, in other words, the rear view mirror power structures, and thinking that what is coming will reinforce that, though that never turns out that way, so there's going to be a conflict. And so the kids represent the battles and struggles by the bureaucratic top-down guys trying to adapt to the thinking and the unforeseen effects of that thinking done by the ALP gang.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like politicians monitoring scientists.
Yeah, well, maybe it's like hunkering down in a storm. Because, like, the telegraph should have a decentralizing effect. But here it has a lockdown centralization.
No. See, that's the one phase back. That's kind of like the top-down chart. Or the bottom-up, where the nation was a ghetto when you moved into the solar age.
Yeah, but the telegraph allows information to flow more freely over, and it closes the gap between distant locations. That means you can set up power points all over the globe, and everybody can talk to each other. That should be decentralizing effect.
That's what I said it would. That's what I said it would do.
But the effect on the HCE side of the ground is that it locks down centralization.
That's the rearview mirror fate of the bureaucrats.
Yeah, that's them. Would you say that's them, you know, hunkering down in a storm? You know?
Right. Well, they're seeing their interests can be enhanced if they do certain things. So here, so you have in this period the beginnings of nations. At least democratic nations, with the American Revolution, then the French Revolution, then all the revolutions of the 19th century. And the idea was you're creating a homogeneous, uniform, literate population. You're centralizing visual space, but what's sneaking up on you is electric, acoustic, and tactile space, but you don't see that.
Okay.
So the intelligence agencies are always fighting the previous war.
Right.
And this is what's expressed by the three kids.
Yeah.
You have them as actors who are, we won't deal with the word retrievals and interiorization yet, but just to keep it simple, Shem is the technological / cultural enemy. Sean is the technological / weaponry. And Issy is the leg. So the anthropomorphic, sociological, psychological mask leg, that implies rearview mirror. But all three of them are in a leg. They're fighting what is obvious and fighting between it. So under Sean, His new weaponry is manufactured materials, the beginning of the Industrial Revolution. Actually,
right.
And just a second, I'm going to look at my own chart here. I'm looking at the one on the computer. There's a misspelling there. Mark put in manufacturers. It's manufacturers, which was the term back then for technologies.
So spell it the way it should be?
You drop off the last R.
Well, let's go ahead and spell it.
Manufactures.
Okay. Well, that's how it is spelled on my chart.
No, it says RERS.
Well, on whatever chart you're looking at, but the one that I printed off from wherever I got it is correct.
Oh, okay. I'm looking at the one on our own website that Mark Free made.
Yeah.
So that should be manufacturers, and it means technology. So new technologies are going to be the weaponry to knock off the previous establishment, which is the British monarchy, which used America as a raw material resource for taxes, tax farming, based on usury. So you have here the technological cultural enemy is usury slash monarchy, and the new weaponry coming out of the United States, or America before it's the United States. Like you say, America is a place where they can start making new technologies and aren't bogged down by the monarchies of Europe.
Yeah.
So the probing with and the attempt to stir up a storm and take over is represented by the technological slash weaponry column. And then under ISI, in the sense that social stability is often geared around women. Women are seen as, traditionally, were seen as the ones who kept home and hearth secure. The men were out there defending the village or whatever, and probing and dealing with new unforeseen effects, whereas back at home, the women were keeping society stable and educating the kids. So they're protecting what is already given. So they naturally are preserving the past. So that's what they see. And it's anthropomorphic. It projects into the environment human concerns. So the anthropomorphic, sociological, psychological mask or leg in America is represented by the President of the United States. All right?
Yeah, so, why is that a mask?
Because it's a...
What's it masking?
It's masking the raw uncertainty of what's going on. It's the pretending to know. It's the social myths, the social stability. I mean, kids are educated in the myths of their time, and then when they become an adult, they have to realize, well, their parents didn't know as much as they thought they did, and they have to become mature and... get the ability to handle unforeseen situations and the general uncertainty of the social existence while training their own kids with the same kind of myths and confidence and security generation. So,
and why is it a lag?
Oh, it's always preserving what's given, what is known.
Yeah.
It's and it has, it's preserving the past, which should be considered of some kind of worth because it got them to survive this far.
Right. So each of the characters underneath the anthropomorphic, sociological, psychological mask slash lag is there to preserve, not really in a nostalgic way, but almost in a to preserve the status quo so that people can have time to adjust to what's coming.
Right, and also to represent the power that HCE is fighting for. A mask for the secret elites. You know, there's that level. And in this situation of that first column, in the battle between the manufacturers, the new technologies, and use usury slash monarchy. You can see that the two of them are fighting over the daughter, the favor, at least they're presented in Finnegan's Wake, as the brothers fighting over the approval of the sister.
Mm-hmm.
And so the resolution of the battle between the sons is who becomes president.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the president is battling to break away from the oppression of the usury and the monarchy on the one hand. On the other hand, he's trying to stave off the rapid change of the telegraph. He's somewhere sort of trying to balance between the past and the future.
Yeah, there's the stability. Now, he doesn't see the telegraph coming. There's no inkling of that.
Mm-hmm.
So the 1750 to 1800, Washington is trying to resolve a battle between, you could say, Alexander Hamilton and the Jeffersonian forces about whether to have a central bank or not.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of constitution, states' rights versus federal powers? That is the battle within the United States. So they're trying to resolve the centralizing effect of manufacturers and the European technologies from the Gutenberg era.
Mm-hmm.
So the battle between two rearview mirror established environments is resolved by the independence of the United States, and therefore it looks like they've locked down a centralized, stable situation.
Mm-hmm.
But sneaking up on them is going to be not the movies, visibly, the newspaper versus the printed book.
Yeah, and we'll get into that next week, unless you want to say a few words to include or to wrap up what we've talked about.
Okay, we're finished. We're almost finished, eh?
Yeah.
So the point is to look at ALP as a totally hidden, invisible environment that humans are going to create and are involved in making 50 or more years before, but have no clue that's coming. And the elites under HCE are interpreting what they think people are inventing and thinking about and trying to jockey for position and power and stability within that. That's the drama. And the three kids act out the previous technologies, battles, mostly dealing with causes, in quotes, that have merged with the effects of known environments.
Mm-hmm.
They don't foresee the invisible effects coming.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the basic pattern we're going to work through here.
Okay, so we're off to a good start.
Okay, good.
Okay, I'm going to turn it off.